Hi, Lynn. Yeah, I don't actually have any poppycock. I do like it very much, but I was saying poppycock to that idea that you expressed about being afraid to ask because thinking they would say no. I was going, poppycock. I think that also means something like, you know, silliness or something. I don't know. If somebody's really bored, I suppose they can go look up poppycock and see what it means. But that was always my interpretation of its meaning. But the popcorn is good, too, with the nuts and the caramel. Oh, it's very good. Very expensive, if I remember correctly. Crunch and Munch is cheaper. Yeah. So, hi, everyone. Welcome to Sunday, March 2nd. And what I've been doing lately is teaching from the seven steps. So that's what I'm going to be doing tonight. And I think before we go into the seven steps, what I feel like doing first is just having a few minutes of silence along with some music. There's one song that I have in my collection that's only about 3 minutes long, but it's absolutely beautiful. It's called Harp Meditation. Actually, it's only 1 minute and 52 seconds long. So just a couple minutes then of silence while we listen to this lovely song. Thank you for taking that bit of silence with me. So what I'm doing is sharing from the Seven Steps to Awakening, and I'm sharing from Step 3. I started that last week. And Step 3 is really about seeing the ego in yourself so that you can let it go. The way he words it is, let me see if I can find the beginning of the chapter again. I'll read the way Michael Langford, he says, the objective of step three, to see how the imposter self perpetuates its imaginary self and all illusion and suffering. That's the objective of step three. And I just started that last week with quote 525. And tonight we're up to quote 530. I am going to give you a link to my journal, and then if you have the Seven Steps to Awakening, you could grab that too, because even though this says 529, it's 530. I must have made a mistake and went back and corrected it, and the link still says 529. But if you click on the link that I just put in the room, that will take you to my journal at number 530. If you happen to be listening on the radio or the audio later and you want to go to 530, you can just go to RDA7. It is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then you just click on step 2 up on the menu bar. And then click on the first set of numbers, which is 214 to 250. And once you click on that set of numbers, you just find your way to 530. And that's where we're beginning. And what I'm going to do is read the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening. For those of you that aren't familiar with this process, the Seven Steps to Awakening is a contemplation practice. So what you do is you read the quotes. The instructions are to read them slowly at least three times, contemplate them, and then when you feel an inner wisdom arising in yourself, at least I put that to words. I guess you don't have to. You could just sit and marinate in the inner wisdom, but I always enjoy putting it to words on paper. So that's what I did, and that's what my journal is. The quote number 530, and right now the series of quotes that we're in are all teachings of Ramana Maharshi, but they're poetic teachings. They're not his words exactly. It's a poetic rendition written down by Muru Ganar, whom I happen to adore. I adore Muru Ganar. My heart is just full with him. So these are really his words, but Ramana Maharshi's teachings. And quote number 530 is, "When ego goes, there is no loss of being. Hence, be not afraid." So that is the quote that was contemplated. And if you look in my journal at number 530, this is what you'll find written. "We fear loss of the familiar merely because it is unknown to us. But if it is unknown to us, do we know what we are letting fear keep us from? Forget fear of the unknown and stay focused on being that is present now. Follow inner guidance while remaining focused on present, unchanging being. What occurs will occur naturally in this way." As I was reading this just now, and this was originally written on July 23rd, 2012, so what I'm about to share would not have occurred to me back then because, you know, situations have changed. But as I was reading this just now, I was kind of reminded of Cheryl Valentine and some conversations that she and I have had. As you all know, she has brain tumors, and then some other ailments have kind of come along with that. And, you know, her day-to-day existence is certainly more difficult than it used to be. Plus, you know, the doctors have told her from the very, very beginning that her situation is terminal, that she will die. They gave her maybe a year, even with treatment. So that idea of death is always kind of, you know, looming there. So you have a difficult life with a promise of death at the end. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't look like a pretty situation. I think you all know that Cheryl has used it for spiritual practice. But if you talk to her on the phone, she'll tell you that it does get difficult and she does get frustrated. One thing that she and I talked about was this idea of death. And we talked as honestly as I know how to talk about death. We don't know what the heck it is. Many of us have different beliefs about what it is. You know, some people believe in the process of reincarnation. Some people believe in heaven. Some people, as you know, believe that when you die, you awaken. Some people believe that death is just unconsciousness, you know, complete unconsciousness, like the unconsciousness, you know, we experience when we're having an operation. Just, you know, you couldn't suffer from it because it's just, you can't miss anything. It's just complete unconsciousness. And to say that I know what death is, well, I don't. I can tell you what I've learned that death is from masters. But I can't tell you what I know. And there was something very, very peaceful. Both, I think Cheryl and I both experienced it when we talked about death honestly. I think that when we're speaking from beliefs, because beliefs are something that we're uncertain about, there's an uncertainty in every single belief, that when you start talking about beliefs, you also experience some fear. Because that uncertainty is there, that doubt is there, that what if I'm wrong is there. But when you just flat out admit, I don't know what it is, I mean, I really don't know, somehow that takes the fear out of it, and it just opens up a curiosity and a realization. It opens up the realization that I don't know that this is fearful. Why should I fear? I'm only fearing something that I'm making up. You know, whatever I fear about death, it has to be something that I'm making up about death, because I don't know. So I'm making stuff up and being afraid of it. Well, this particular quote isn't about the body death. It's about the ego death, which some say we fear even more than the body death. But it seems to me that the same rule applies. We don't know what that experience of no ego is like. How do we know that it's fearful? How do we know it's worth our energy and our suffering now to fear it? We don't know. So why bother? There's something else in this particular quote too. Once you make the decision not to fear, because you realize you're just fearing, you know, something that you've made up, you couldn't possibly know whether what you're fearing is fearful or not. Once you let go of the idea of fear, then it shows you how to focus. You focus your attention on the changeless being that is present now. And any of y'all that have heard Cheryl teach, you know that this has been her primary guidance since she was diagnosed. At first, she seemed to receive this guidance a lot through Nisargadatta. She would hear Nisargadatta whispering in her mind. In the last few months, it's taken a turn. It's been Jesus. But the guidance has remained the same. And the guidance is to focus on the I Am presence now. Just stay with that. We fear loss of the familiar, which would be this personality self that I think of as me, merely because it is unknown to us, meaning the loss of it is unknown to us. But if it is unknown to us, do we know what we are letting fear keep us from? Fear is actually irrational in this case. I can understand being afraid if you're hiking and you come face to face with a mountain lion. You might have a little bit of an idea of what you might be facing, and that might be a little scary. But when it comes to the ego death, or even the body death, you know, just the death itself, we don't even know. Why do we fear it? Does it have any logic to it at all? The recommendation is forget fear of the unknown and stay focused on being that is present now. Follow inner guidance while remaining focused on present, unchanging being. What occurs will occur naturally in this way. And what this is really referring to, again, this particular quote was about the ego death, not the body death. So when this says what occurs will occur naturally in this way, it means as you focus on the I Am, as you focus on the present, unchanging being, the ego will die. the ego will fade away. But there's no sense in fearing it, no sense in kicking and screaming about it. Just stay with the I am, which you already are and always are. And with that, I'm going to move to the next quote, which will be 531. If you happen to be in the journal with me, you can just scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on 531. And I am going to give you that link in the room now, 531, for anyone who isn't yet in the journal and wants to join us. There you go. I'm also going to read 531 from the steps the Seven Steps to Awakening. The separate ego, wholly dead. The indivisible self as pure awareness brightly shines. This I is not the false conceptual self, earthbound and bodybound. Now remember, the objective of step three is to notice how the ego perpetuates itself. And it seems that one of the ways the ego perpetuates itself is simply through our fear of letting it go. And so what these quotes are helping us to do is to look at that differently. You know, sometimes people teach, and I understand the teaching. I really do understand it. I understand where it comes from. Sometimes people teach, you know, we're afraid of the ego, or we're afraid of love, or, you know, something like that. We're afraid to let go of the ego. We're afraid of love. We're afraid of truth. We're afraid to know thyself. And I used to teach that, too. But one day, when I was actually watching someone else teach it in writing, and so they wrote it many, many times about how we're afraid of love. And one day, while watching that, it just kind of hit me, why would I keep telling myself that? You know, we believe what we think, right? So if I keep telling myself over and over and over again, I'm afraid of love, I'm afraid of love, I'm afraid of love, isn't that helping the ego to perpetuate itself? Now, I don't want to deny any fear that's there. That's not what I'm recommending. But what if we look at that fear, and as the previous quote helped us to see, ask, is this fear rational? Do I know that there's something to fear? And start practicing inquiry, you know, kind of an is that true inquiry on the idea of fearing the ego death. And what these quotes, again, appear to be helping us to do is to look at that idea, the idea of the ego death, differently. Because fearing it is one of the ways that the ego perpetuates itself. Spirit does not fear the ego death. So what we really are does not fear the ego death. So what am I reinforcing in myself? Who am I reinforcing myself to be? If I keep saying I do fear, aren't I just reinforcing that I'm the false self? Isn't that the I that fears? And is that true? Is that who I am? So, again, this quote, 531, says, the separate ego, wholly dead, the indivisible self as pure awareness, brightly shines. This I is not the false conceptual self, earthbound and bodybound. So it's pointing at something beyond the ego that is still what I am, right? If we look at the journal says, wanting to be enlightened is an obstacle to enlightenment when the idea of a self experiencing enlightenment is a part of the goal desired. No self, no experience. This is enlightenment. No self, no experience. Maybe it's words like that that scare people sometimes. But if you look very, very deeply at what this quote is saying, the quote in the Seven Steps to Awakening, it says that the I that you find when the false conceptual self has, quote, died, is pure awareness, brightly shining. Pure awareness has no self in it. Pure awareness has no idea of me separate from you. Pure awareness has no ideas of lack in it. Pure awareness has no ideas of I need to get ... in it. Pure awareness has no attack or defense in it. No guilt, no unworthiness, no fear. Pure awareness, brightly shining, is merely that. Pure awareness, brightly shining. No self. But also no experience. Not when you define experience as things that change, things that come and go. One day I wake up and I'm really, really happy, and another day I wake up and I feel kind of blah. Another day I wake up and I might even feel agitated. That's experience. The changing self is experience. No experience is pure awareness, brightly shining. Now, Cindy, I see you. You want me to re-quote 5:30 from the Seven Steps to Awakening or from the journal? I'll read it from the Seven Steps to Awakening first, and if you wanted it from the journal, let me know. Okay, so we'll read 5:30 and 5:31 side by side. 5:30 says, when ego goes, there is no loss of being. Hence, be not afraid. 5:31 says, the separate ego, wholly dead, the indivisible self, as pure awareness brightly shines. This I, this pure awareness that brightly shines, is not the false conceptual self, earthbound and bodybound. So again, what both quotes are pointing to, they're pointing at our fear of the ego death, or as it's sometimes worded in this room, our fear of love. And it's asking us to question that. Because believing that we have a fear of love, that idea itself is an obstacle to awakening. And when we're attached to the self, the little self that fears love, we're also mistaken about who we are, because that is not our reality. And that's why the recommendation of the previous journal entry was, instead of focusing on your fear, why not focus on present being, present changeless being? It's here right now, and it is your reality. So why not just shift our attention from the belief I'm afraid of love to present isness and stay there? I'm going to go on to 5:32. So if you're in the journal, you can scroll down underneath comment and reply and click on 5:32. I'll start by reading 5:32 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. When the ego life dissolves and dies in silence, then one lives the life supreme of pure awareness. when the false ego, dreamlike, fades into its source, the true self rises of its own accord. I think that's really beautiful, so I'm going to read it again because I really think it's beautiful. Again, this is by the poet Muru Ganar. When the ego life dissolves and dies in silence, then one lives the life supreme of pure awareness. When the false ego, dreamlike, fades into its source, the true self rises of its own accord. So after contemplating that, I wrote in my journal, seek nothing. Let ego die by letting self fade. Do not exercise ego by not exercising my thoughts, opinions, ideas, and points of view. Let each one die, disappearing into non-existing. In no thing, self is found. I don't really know what Buddhists think about Buddhist teaching. I've never been a Buddhist. I've never been educated by a Buddhist. But I have read some of Buddhist teachings just directly for myself and just contemplated them within myself. And I'm aware of a teaching called, interdependent co-arising, but it's a teaching that is really very much like the code. It's really the same as the code, the same as NTI Ephesians. It's the teaching that everything affects everything, that, you know, all of our current perceptions of this moment writes the next moment of the script. Everything affects everything. And it's kind of the same as that loop I've sometimes taught. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And you just, it's all of these teachings are really the same. And you just have this loop that just keeps running itself. It's what many teachers like Muji call conditioning. And the interesting thing about this loop is that even as I react to the loop continues. And this actually coincides with the teaching of the Tao, you know. So if I see a problem and I try to fix the problem, I'm actually still a part of the conditioning loop. And what that really means is illusion continues for me. If I fix a problem, things may temporarily seem better, but at some point, they always swing back to another problem. We all know this, right? So as we seek in the world for a better existence, or as we seek to make a better self, the truth is all we're doing is continuing with the illusion. All of that is illusion-making behavior. It's just loop-making loop. Everything making everything, interdependent co-arising, the code, the script, self-perpetuating itself. It's all of that. But one thing that I saw the Buddha said also is that we all have the seed of awakening within ourselves. So what is that seed of awakening? If everything I try to do only perpetuates illusion. This is what I contemplated. If everything I try to do to make myself better, to make my circumstances better, to make my family better, to make me happier, if all of that actually just perpetuates illusion, then what the heck is this seed of awakening? And how do I embrace this seed of awakening? And as I contemplated that, what came up for me was that it's the doing nothing. It's the not responding to illusion, the not reacting to illusion, the not following that train of thought, the not changing things, the nothingness, the being nothing, the being still. You know, and this is the idea of rest, accept, and trust. This is the idea of being centered in the Tao. This is the idea, I need do nothing from A Course in Miracles. And this is what I perceive was also the Buddha's teaching. Be still and know that I am God. Yeah, from the Bible. It seems to me as I'm studying all of these different spiritual paths lately, that they're actually all the same. And not only that, I would say the most critical elements are becoming much, much, much more clear because they're repeated over and over and over again in different ways using different symbols, but they're absolutely consistent. So if we look again at 532, it says, seek nothing. That means that anything I try to do to better my experience, to better myself, it's actually continuing the ego. I want to seek nothing and let the ego die by letting the self fade. I want to do nothing. I want to stand center. I want to be still and let that loop fade out. Do not exercise ego. This is what I want to do. I want to not exercise ego by not exercising my thoughts, my opinions, my ideas, and my points of view. And I don't know if you've ever tried that, but that can seem difficult. And do you know why it seems difficult? It's because we have so many great ideas on how to make things better, on how to improve things. And it feels like such a good intention to want to make things better for myself and others. But that's playing the game of illusion. That keeps the conditioning loop running round and round and round. We don't awaken through the improvement game. We awaken through the hands-off, be still, do nothing process. And then that loop begins to naturally fade because we're no longer giving it energy. Do not exercise ego by not exercising my thoughts, opinions, ideas, and points of view. Let each one die, disappearing into non-existing. Again, ideas like that sometimes scare people, non-existing. I've had people write to me and say, you know, some teacher said that we're no thing, nothing. That scares me. But as we've seen in the first few quotes tonight, how do you know that's scary? Isn't that just an idea? Do you really know that no thing, pure awareness, brightly shining, is scary? And if you don't really know that, why fear it? Especially when you're being called through the heart toward it. Why not trust your heart? Why fear it? And then if you choose not to fear it, then what you choose to do is to be still. Stop exercising your personality self, your ideas, your opinions, your points of view. Focus on the presence, the I am presence. Be still. Focus on the presence. Let go of those temptations to have ideas. Be still. Focus on the presence. And the loop just kind of fades and awakening happens. That's what this is saying. That's why this says, seek nothing. Let the ego die by letting self fade. Do not exercise ego by not exercising my thoughts, opinions, ideas, and points of view. Let each one die, disappearing into non-existing. In no thing, self is found. Pure awareness shining brightly. Let go of the self. Let go of the clinging. Tonight we're going to look at today's daily quote. Today's daily quote is about clinging because we're afraid to let go. And the very last part of that quote says that I cling to my opinions because I'm afraid to be nothing. And today we're being asked, why are you afraid to be nothing? Do you know that it's fearful? Why do you fight and cling to your opinions? Why not let go and let die? Follow the natural course that will occur when you let go. I'm going to play a song, if I can find it. Let's see. It does have a little search function. Maybe I can find it if I search. Yep, here it is. Oh, it's Karen Drucker. Let Go of the Shore. Let's listen to this.
Let go of the shore and let you will arrive. Let go of the shore and let the water carry you. Let go of the shore, float into the mystery. Let go of the shore and let the water carry you. Let go of the shore.
Tonight we started with quote number 530. When ego goes, there is no loss of being. Hence, be not afraid. Quote 531. The separate ego wholly dead, the indivisible self as pure awareness brightly shines. This I is not the false conceptual self, earthbound and body-bound. Number 532. When the ego life dissolves and dies in silence, then one lives the life supreme of pure awareness. When the false ego, dreamlike, fades into its source, the true self rises of its own accord. So now we'll move on to quote number 533. If you are in the journal with me, you can scroll down underneath the comment and reply area. And you'll see where there's a 533. You can click on that. Oh, Lynn and I posted at the exact same time. Look at that. Tell you what, Lynn, I'll let you take care of posting from now on. You got it going. You got it going. All right, so 533 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Great knowers recognize no other bondage than the rising movements of the mind, and they find true release nowhere but in the total death, leaving no trace behind of every movement of the mind. So when I talked a moment ago about how I interpret the Buddhist teaching, which is the same as the code and the same as NTI Ephesians and the same as the what I think I see loop, I said that the way to awakening is to do nothing, stand centered, be still, and let the loop fade. Let the conditioning fade. Let the self fade. Let the ego fade. Let it all fade, disappear, die. And this seems to be saying the same thing. Listen carefully to these words and see if you don't hear the same thing now coming from Ramana Maharshi through Muruganar. Great knowers recognize no other bondage than the rising movements of the mind, and they find true release nowhere but in the total death, leaving no trace behind of every movement of the mind. Do you hear the same teaching there? And how does that total death of every movement of the mind come about? By us not participating in it, by us standing center, being still. And by the way, when I was contemplating the Bhagavad Gita, a clarity arose in me that had never come before, and it was so shocking that this clarity had never come before, because sometimes when a clarity comes, it is so incredibly obvious. It's just like, how could I not have seen this before? And that's how I feel about this clarity. Maybe you all knew and I was the only one missing it. But as I contemplated the Bhagavad Gita, what I saw is to be still. How do I say this? I'll start by telling you what I used to think. I used to think be still meant have no thoughts, like they were synonymous. Be still equals have no thoughts. And so I would often say that, my mind is never still. There's always thoughts happening. But when I was contemplating the Bhagavad Gita, suddenly a new understanding of be still came. Be still was about staying with the eye, the non-changing self, the presence, the awareness, staying with that even while the thoughts are swirling, but not going with the thoughts, leaving attention with the eye, or some people would call it awareness watching awareness. But leaving, I would call it, because you got to pick the words that work for you, to be honest. You got to pick the words that work for you. They all draw the same picture. They all are the same guidance. But if somebody uses a set of words that means nothing to you, those words are useless. Staying with the eye. Those are the words that work for me. Be still is staying with the eye and not running off with the thoughts. And the eye is not the eye thought, because it's running off with the thoughts. So the eye I'm talking about is different. The eye thought is all worried about the body and all worried about the reputation and all worried about the future and all regretting the past, so it runs off. The eye that I'm staying with is solid. It's here. It's the rock. It's Peter, whom I have around my neck. Peter the rock. The eye. The changeless self. So to be still is to stay with the eye, even if the mind is very, very loud. It has nothing to do with there being no thoughts. Now again, let's listen to quote 533. Great knowers recognize no other bondage than the rising movements of the mind, and they find true release nowhere but in the total death, leaving no trace behind of every movement of the mind. How do you get to a truly still mind where there's no movement of the mind? By being still, even as there are movements of the mind. See? Stillness leads to stillness. Stillness is the path. If I follow those thoughts, which have ideas of improvements, ideas of making better, I'm reinforcing the illusory self and reinforcing the illusion. I'm following that, what I think, I see, what I see, I experience, what I experience, I think, loop. Everything's continuing to happening. I'm still participating in interdependent co-arising. I'm still participating in the code, right? I'm participating. I'm a part of it. But if I stay still, even while it's still running in all directions, if I stay still, I'm not participating. And it's my non-participation that allows those movements to slow, weaken, fade, and eventually die. And then that's the stillness with a capital S, because there are no more movements. And that's awakening. And that's pure awareness shining brightly, because there's no thinking. Pure awareness shining brightly. All right, we still haven't looked at what I wrote in the journal, so let's go back to the journal, 533. All thinking burdens with the idea of false self. No thinking seen as meaningful points clearly toward truth. No thinking seen as meaningful means, see not my thoughts as meaningful, and have no opinion regarding his thoughts or her thoughts. You know, this takes us back to the early lessons of A Course in Miracles, right? If I give meaning to a thought, I'm going to follow it. I'm going to participate. I'm going to maintain the false self and my perception of illusion. I can't stand still and give meaning to. I may be trying to stand still with the eye, but if I've given meaning to that thought right there, that thought about money that's trying to save me, if that's the meaning I give it, that thought right there is trying to save me, I'm going to follow it. If I say that thought about what others think of me is trying to save me, is trying to keep me looking good, protect my reputation, if I give that thought that meaning, I'm going to follow it. But if I do not give the thoughts meaning, if I see them as mere movements of the mind, like the quote says, they're just movements of the mind, and the only thing that I really give meaning to is my commitment to awakening to truth, then I'll be able to stand still. I can only stand still with the I if I do not give meaning to the movements of mind. David says, why do you give meaning to that commitment, Gina? In A Course in Miracles, there's a wonderful line, David. It says, the Holy Spirit uses everything that the ego made. And what that means is in the undoing process, the Holy Spirit uses decision, desire, in this case, commitment, trust, faith. All of these things did not exist prior to the ego. When the ego came into existence, decision and faith and trust and commitment and desire and judgment all were a part of it. And now those exact same forces are used to reverse it. If you think of a pendulum, David, think of a pendulum that's going left to right, left to right, left to right. And you need the pendulum to go forward and backward, forward and backward, forward and backward. It's still a movement, it's just a different movement. Well, that's the same thing with undoing. If you do not have a commitment to staying still, then your conditioning will have a default commitment of following the thoughts. If you don't make a decision to stay still, then your default decision will be to follow the thoughts. If you don't have a desire to stay still, your default desire will still follow the thoughts. So it's just a reversal. You're welcome. So, again, back to the journal. all thinking burdens with the idea of false self. No thinking seen as meaningful. Notice this doesn't say no thinking. Because as I mentioned, the thinking is still happening. The movements are still there. But now what we're doing is undoing the habit of following that thinking. And the way we undo the habit of following that thinking is by seeing the thinking as merely movements of mind. No more meaning than that, just merely movements of mind. And where our focus is to stay still. No thinking seen as meaningful means see not my thoughts as meaningful and have no opinion regarding his thoughts or her thoughts. And that's because when I have an opinion about his thoughts or her thoughts, you know what I'm accidentally doing? I'm giving my thought meaning. I'm giving my thought meaning. So again, we want to stay still, not participate. I don't think I want to start another one. There's only a few minutes left, and I like doing this very, very slowly. It feels very, very right to me. So what I'll do is just kind of review, both from the journal and from the Seven Steps to Awakening, 530 through 533. So starting with the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 530. When ego goes, there is no loss of being. Hence, be not afraid. The separate ego, wholly dead, the indivisible self as pure awareness, brightly shines. This I is not the false conceptual self, earthbound and bodybound. When the ego life dissolves and dies in silence, then one lives in the life supreme of pure awareness. When the false ego, dreamlike, fades into its source, the true self rises of its own accord. Great knowers recognize no other bondage than the rising movements of the mind, and they find true release nowhere but in the total death, leaving no trace behind of every movement of mind. All right, let me go back to 530 in the journal and I'll read those. And then, of course, after this, we'll begin our member meeting. So starting with number 530 in the journal. We fear loss of the familiar merely because it is unknown to us. But if it is unknown to us, do we know what we are letting fear keep us from? Forget fear of the unknown and stay focused on being that is present now. Follow inner guidance while remaining focused on present, unchanging being. What occurs will occur naturally in this way. Wanting to be enlightened is an obstacle to enlightenment when the idea of a self experiencing enlightenment is a part of the goal desired. No self, no experience. This is enlightenment. Seek nothing. Let ego die by letting self fade. Do not exercise ego by not exercising my thoughts, opinions, ideas, and points of view. Let each one die, disappearing into non-existing. In no thing, self is found. All thinking burdens with the idea of false self. no thinking seen as meaningful points clearly toward truth. No thinking seen as meaningful means, see not my thoughts as meaningful, and have no opinion regarding his thoughts or her thoughts. So, that's the conclusion of today's teaching from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Now, as far as the Seven Steps to Awakening goes, the next two Sundays, I will not be here because I am leaving on Friday to go to Costa Rica with five other ladies, and we're going to spend 10 days there in a contemplative retreat at a jungle hideaway. So it should be quite interesting. And there will be some discussion also. But I won't be teaching. You might see us in the room. We might come in the room somewhat. We might come in the room for the Sunday morning gathering. We might come into the room for Bob Ferguson. And we might even come into the room some other times. I don't know for sure. Those are the two I really have in my mind. But I won't be holding a schedule like I do here. So I definitely won't be showing up for the teaching. We're going to be a little more schedule-less while there. Before moving into the member meeting, I'm just going to play a song just kind of as a break. This song is by a band called The River's Voice, and it's Behold, an Ancient Voice is Calling.
Behold, behold, an ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, 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 an ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, 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 an ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky, an ancient voice is calling us. All over the sky, an ancient voice is calling us. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky, an ancient voice is calling us. All over the sky, an ancient voice is calling us. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. All over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold, all over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. All over the sky. An ancient voice is calling us. Behold, behold.